Hello, everyone, and welcome to another expert interview at the Innovation and Creativity Summit 2017. Very happy to have Jeffrey Shaw with us today. Jeffrey is an elite photographer. He is the host of the very popular Creative Warriors podcast, and he's also a business coach around the topics of improving your creativity in business and how to figure out exactly how to market yourself. Jeffrey, it's wonderful having you here.
Well, I'm glad to be here, Nick. Thank you.
So for people who aren't aware of who you are and the work that you do, can you give us a bit of background as to where you started and how you got into the concepts of creativity?
Sure. So I started out as a professional portrait photographer when I was 20. And by that, I mean I photographed families and children on location. So right away, I was in an unusual business. I mean, people just didn't do this for a living. I wasn't sure that I could do it for a living. I thought it would probably make more sense to be an architect. But I didn't have the patience to go to school for an architect. So I went to photography school. And so that's kind of my foundation of thinking. I mean, I achieved a very high level of success in a relatively short period of time as a portrait photographer in a very, you know, unique market of the super affluent of the United States. I kind of took it for granted, honestly. I was young. I didn't take the success for granted, but I took the journey for granted. I didn't realize how unique it was, even though I knew my friends around me who were photographers were barely getting by, going out of business right and left. It wasn't until I matured and people started coming to me and saying, how did you do that? Then I realized that I had some unique marketing and branding skills and different mindsets. So from that, I started coaching. And then once again, I built a coaching practice much more rapidly than coaches historically do. So again, now coaches come to me looking for coaching. So that's kind of my thing. I just realized, you know, what I love to do and I encourage people to do is just hand me whatever freaking unusual business you have and I'll show you how to make money at it. Like I'm not a corporate coach. I'm not really interested in the easy way to make money. What really excites me is people doing really unusual things in the world. And that I can figure out. I don't know why it is. It's just in my brain. I can figure out how to make the connections between people doing unusual things in the world and how to make a successful business model out of it.
I think that's one of the reasons why I'm so keen to speak to you today, just because there seems to be a stigma around doing different things or creative expression things as a profession. A lot of people think of artists as either being super successful or living on someone's couch and, as you say, struggling to get by. Whereas it doesn't really need to be like that.
No, and the problem is, I think the bigger issue is that's how the artists see themselves. You know, they just kind of fall victim, I guess, to the whole mentality of you know, the starving artist. Although actually, you know, having said that, I don't know if it's the biggest issue. I think the biggest issue is they really quickly adopt this attitude that I can't be good at business, right? So they so quickly write off that they can't be good at business, which is simply not true. The problem is they've probably been trying to do business the wrong way all along. And the reason that is that we live in a very traditional business model mindset. The world is, in fact, primarily, I don't know the statistic, but what, 90% you know, left-brained? I'm left-handed. You know, what percentage of us are left-handed, right? It's a lot less. And that there's a direct correlation to creativity there. So the fact of the matter is we live in this really traditional business world that has a certain way of doing things that feels creepy to us, that is not aligned with the way that we want to do business. And we immediately just assume that we can't be good at business when actually it's the other way around. I mean, if there's ever been a time in history where the world is waiting for the more soul-centered person to show up, I was leading a coaching call recently and saying how, you know, as a lot of creatives are introverts, what a great time to be in business as an introvert, right? It's the qualities of an introvert that really can shine today as far as we're good listeners, we're heartfelt, we tend to be very present and attentive. Social media, what a great outlet for marketing for the introvert. You don't have to leave your home. So I actually think this is the time, which is why I'm stepping up so much. I don't know if you've heard the statistics that by 20, in the US anyway, but I'll bet it applies in the UK and other countries as well, that by 2030, 60% of the economy will be driven by freelancers and creatives in business. 60%. So the opportunity is there. I have to say, partly my fear, Nick, though, is are we going to be prepared to know how to succeed? because there aren't MBA programs for this, right? And that's
even if there were MBA programs, would they be the appropriate thing?
Not for 10 years, right? Not until the schools adapt. Talk about institutions that take forever to adapt, right? Educational institutions take forever to, which is why I'm such a big believer in online education, online courses nowadays, because you can get that burst of information. You have to put together your own MBA program, take online classes with the people that, with coaches and trainers that are aligned, put together your own MBA program, because it doesn't currently exist if you're doing anything in business out of the ordinary. I have coached many people. One comes to mind who's a NASA scientist. I mean, this is a brilliant woman. She decided to become a photographer. And on one of our calls, she said, she was like defending herself. She goes, "I'm a smart woman. Why can't I figure out how to run a photography business?" I was like, "Well, welcome to the world of creativity and business." Like her, she's a smart woman. Her whole world has been very, very left brain, very logical. And yet she's incredibly creative and talented as a photographer. By the way, succeeding madly now. But when I started working with her, that was the biggest shift. It's like, how do I learn to be in business as a creative person instead of a creative person fighting against the way the world is doing business?
And I think that's probably where we should start the conversation. The questions around why do these people who want to do their own thing, whether or not it's in small companies, startups, or individuals trying to do creative work, why do they struggle so much with this concept of running a business?
Yeah. Well, I said fundamentally because no one's pointing out to them that they can do it differently. I work with a lot of, because of my background as a photographer, I still coach a lot of photographers. Obviously incredibly visual people who send out the ugliest emails possible, right? And just suddenly I point out the obvious. I'm like, it's because they're trying. Why? Because they're receiving email blasts from every online marketer out there and they're trying to emulate them instead of saying, but that's not who I am. I can actually bring something better and newer to the game of online marketing because I've got this visual capability. So a lot of times it's hard. I often say to people, look, in the world we live in today, you can't shut off all this information. On occasions, I will make my coaching clients get off Facebook for a month just to bring some quiet into their world. But how many of us can really stay off Facebook for a month? Not easy. The fact of the matter is all the information is out there and it's often very contrasting information. What we often need is a better filter of discernment, there's so many ways in which the traditional world tells us to behave a certain way, and overwhelm is one of them, right? We're always told to control the overwhelm. The fact of the matter is creative thinking people have a broader peripheral vision than your ordinary person. We see more, hear more, and feel more. That's what makes us talented. So you're not going to shut that off. Shutting that off would be a contrast. So instead of shutting it off, instead add to that what I refer to as a filter of discernment. The ability to decide what's to your advantage and what's not to your advantage, but don't shut it off. In the same way, one of my strongest positions is around this idea that we're constantly told to focus. The worst business advice out there today for a lot of us, certainly any creative thinking person in business, the worst business advice out there is to find a niche. It really is. And that's been the most common traditional business advice for a while now. Why is that so horrible? One, it's a bad business model, right? Because if there's a change in technology, you can become irrelevant overnight. It also is, and what to me the biggest issue is that it's in complete contrast to the natural ability to be creative. We do see, hear, and feel more. Leverage that. So I say, leverage the lack of focus. And from that, what's a common denominator that you can use? What makes you different makes you marketable. Let's find that. Let's dig for what makes you different and unique. As far as I'm concerned, whatever different avenues of your business model that you create, they're no different than different artistic mediums, whether it's pastels or oils or sculpture. And in the Renaissance, that was revered. Today, it's somehow criticized. And I think it needs to be reversed. To truly succeed in business, we need to be diversifiers.
It's a very controversial statement. You say that people who are trying to set up a business shouldn't be focusing, because quite often, especially creative people, they are more prone to taking in all of this new information that other people aren't seeing, but that can also cause them to be quite distracted and not really know how to progress on actually getting results.
So what would you
say to that?
I say that there's a difference between focus and direction. All right. That's an important distinction. It's important to have a direction, right? And direction is established by your ability to visualize your future, to be committed to it. I encourage people to not change directions a lot. If you're a creative thinking person, if you tend to be innovative, which you want to be, don't expect success the first time out of the gate. I have a rule with my coaching clients. If we're doing something new, I require they do it 3 times before we assess whether to continue doing it or not. Because if it's truly awesome, it shouldn't work the first time because we're creating a change. We're creating an atmosphere that's different, a marketing effort that's different than what people expect. It probably shouldn't work the first time because it's new. The second time gives you a chance to tweak it. The third time gives you the chance to evaluate whether to do it or not. So I think one of the challenges, because of that natural creative ability to chase squirrels, is to change directions a lot. You want to stay in your direction. That doesn't mean you want to narrow the focus. Very big difference. And I think hopefully people are hearing that for the first time, because I don't think that is said often enough, that there's a difference between direction and focus. We need direction, but that doesn't mean we should narrow the opportunities by being collapsing to that idea that we have to focus on one thing. I think it limits our creativity, and I think it's a bad business model.
So let's say we've got someone who's got something they want to do. They've got all the talent and ability and knowledge on how to execute something perfectly, but they just can't seem to find people who want it. Why do you think that is? Why do you think so many people struggle to actually make money from what they're passionate about?
They're not communicating it. Everything communicates your message. So I have a keynote presentation I give, which is called The Secret Language of Success. And this truly is, if there's, you know, to be a secret or a key, this to me is it. And it is knowing to speak the secret language of the people you want to work with. Every market has a secret language. High end, low end, everything in between has a way that they want to be communicated with. We were talking a moment ago about my controversial statement about, because this statement is on my profile on Twitter, and it says, forcing creative people to focus blocks creativity. And we get 7 to 12 tweets on that a day. Who are they coming from? They're coming from people who get me. And that is fundamentally, I think, the biggest shift I can offer to your listeners to understand that. And this is often hard for creative people to hear, because what they most believe in is being good at what they do. What you're good at is so subjective. So something for you to really understand is that people don't hire you because you're the best. They hire you because you get them and they get you. We are so living in a relationship world that the number one reason why people will hire you is because they feel like you get them. The reason we pick up a book to read is because we read the back and we feel like that author gets us. We relate to things that feel like, man, that person or that situation, that they get me. We will make decisions to not do business with somebody, no matter how talented they are, because the experience of doing business with them wouldn't be worth it. Right? Because we don't feel like they get us. They don't feel like, I mean, there's nothing worse than miscommunication. It kills relationships, starts wars, right? You know, miscommunication is a horrible experience. So to reverse that, for you to get the clients you want, build a business that I refer to as being customer centric, different than customer service. I think a lot of people are very focused on customer service. To build a business that is customer centric is to put the customer at the center and build the business for them. Almost every business, particularly creative businesses, are built backwards. Somebody's good at something or they have a good idea, they build a business, and then they try to find customers. It's backwards. The way to succeed is to know who you want to serve first and build a business for them. And ideally, and it's almost always the case, whoever you are, what you do, and what your skill set is, you want to marry that with the right people. Nick, I'll give you a phrase I tell my clients right in the beginning of my coaching with them. I will to just start shifting our mind as we go into this coaching work, which is a My one-to-one coaching is a year long. I have group coaching that's 6 months, but you know, it's a long-term relationship. I'll tell them right in the beginning, you need to fundamentally believe that there's a world of people that you're meant to work with waiting for you to show up. Right? So really absorb that. Not that I built a business and now I had to find people. Fundamentally believe they're already there. Now it is your job to show up and align with them so that they find you. It's a crowded, noisy world, particularly in marketing. You need to let them know that you're the right one for them, that you get them and they get you. And that is created by the brand image that you create. It's created by the words that you use, the effectiveness of your website, because that's how most often we're being found today. And doing all that in less than 7 seconds, because that's the average attention span.
I mean, it's all quite related to what I often talk about with my clients about innovation. When they tell me that they've got these great new ideas and great new products, and they ask themselves why people in the market aren't responding to them. And one of the most powerful phrases I use is, people don't care what you think of your own ideas. They only care about the value they get from what you're offering them. And it sounds like you're talking the same language here. It's all about people seeing what the relationship with these individuals who are pursuing a creative profession can actually do to add value to their own life.
Yeah, it's actually this, I'm working on my first book, which is about the secret language actually, and the idea of leveraging that. I'm pretty convinced my second book will be about paradoxes, because I'm fascinated by them and the world is full of paradoxes. And this is one of them, that creative people in business, which is why I love working with them, they tend to be heart-centered, purpose-driven, passionate, completely not self-centered, and yet have a way of building their businesses as if they're the center of the universe. You know, as if, you know, I think the worst business advice ever said was Field of Dreams, right? Build it and they will come.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, nothing could be more egotistical and self-centered, but unfortunately, that's the way a lot of people build their business. I'm talented enough. I'm good enough. I'm just going to show up, be there, and everybody's going to show up. And it doesn't work that way. Right? If you want to succeed, it's your job to make the relationship connection to the people you want to serve. You know, and that's one of the ways that I get my clients to really make a difference in their lives, is to up their commitment. And again, because of the way creative people think, it's not that they don't like discipline. You know, we're out of box thinkers. So the last thing you want to do is discipline. So you can't tell someone, a creative thinking person, to have commitment. They have to find it, right? And they find it in knowing that you're so good at what you do. It is a shame if the world doesn't know that you have this talent. Like, it is your job and your responsibility to let the world know that you're good. And when people get that, they will go so far on the limb of their comfort zone. You know, I am primarily an introvert. I am perfectly happy living on the beach in Miami Beach. You know, I put a nice shirt on for you, but I'm wearing my bathing suit. You know, I mean, this is who I am. You know, if I could create all the impact I want to have on the world and never leave my home, I would do that. The fact of the matter is, it requires that I show up on stages in front of thousands of people on an annual basis. It requires that I have this podcast that has become really almost uncomfortably popular. I'm willing to do it, because I want to do the work that needs to get done. It's not even my preferred lifestyle. My preferred lifestyle. And, you know, I interview a lot of authors on my podcast, and it's something so obvious with authors, because one chooses to become an author because they like to be reclusive usually. And, oh no, I'm a best-selling author. Now what? You know, they take on the role that is required because they're passionate about their work and they believe in it. That's where commitment comes from. It's a commitment to serve. People are far, you know, a lot of people that you see as leaders are actually a lot less egotistical than you think, even though they live their lives in a way that they're a center of attention. The fact of the matter is, they're doing what they feel needs to be done in order to have the impact that they want to have in the world.
I think a lot of people listening who have this dream of success from doing what they're passionate about, they love this concept of being a best-selling author or someone who can go and give keynote presentations or just live off their passion. But quite often, when it goes back to what we started talking about right at the beginning, the business aspects of it, all of a sudden they become wallflowers and they're petrified of actually talking about price or making a sales call. There's, I can't remember exactly where I got this quote from, but someone was teaching some business school graduates. And he said, today's lesson is all about sales. And he said, all you need to do is pick up this phone that he gives you and call this number that I'm giving you, and you will pass the test. And if you don't make the call, you will fail the test. And there's still people who can't get over that initial petrifying fear of going out there and saying, hey, I have something to offer. You might say no, but let's try it. Yeah. What would you say to those people?
You know, I'm really big on reframing things, because by the mere mention of sales, people break out in sweats. And, you know, for one, to me, you know, and again, if I look at my process as a portrait photographer, the couple hours I spend with my clients photographing them is really the least significant part of the process to me. The part I love the most is actually the sales appointment, which of course for the client, I'm not calling it a sales appointment. That's the result. It's their portrait selection appointment. But there is no greater satisfaction to me than that moment when there's an exchange of relationship and conversation, because in my case, I'm talking to people about their families and their children. I'm helping them make decisions that, you know, how they're going to use the portraits and display them. You know, think about it, the doctor. Okay, you go to the doctors. The nurse does the grunt work. The nurse takes your blood pressure. The nurse checks your heart. The nurse does the EKG. The doctor shows up to have the relationship, communication, and give you the results. Right? That's service. That's an act of service. So I think first and foremost, we need to reframe things in our own mind that getting people to spend money is not creepy. It's not, you're not taking, this is designed to be a win-win. I really get my clients to stretch on this issue, and almost everybody I work with winds up making more money than they expected, because I almost always have to get them to increase their rates. And I said, you know what, whatever you're charging is not meant to be comfortable for you or your customer. The moment I'm comfortable with my rates, I raise them. I prefer, and I encourage people to be uncomfortable with your own rates so that you are showing up 110%. Money creates commitment from your clients. When they're laying down money outside of their comfort zone, they show up more fully. Even if you're an artist that creates, you know, people are buying your finished art. The difference in emotional impact when we have paid a lot of money for something and that we place on our wall, we are so more emotionally committed to that thing. And the way that we express it to others and the way we share it with people that visit our home than we are the, you know, $10 art piece, a little, you know, painting or something we bought at an art show, right? Money is an energy. We have to stop being creeped out about it. It's just a way of exchange and existing in this world. It's just a structure. But it is a fantastic tool to shift how much people value and appreciate what it is that you do.
I'm sure there's a relationship though where the relationship between the prices you charge and the perceived value that other people see you're bringing. You can't just increase one by increasing the other. There needs to be some other way that you communicate value other than the price that you're charging.
Yeah, today is almost, I mean, I refer to it as an intangible economy. I mean, it is almost all perception today. It's one of my favorite phrases I use in my keynotes, that pricing creates perception, right? You can completely shift one's perception of the value and experience they have with you entirely based on price. And even just the psychology of pricing, how it looks. We have a very different expectation of the experience when we go to a restaurant that doesn't have prices on the menu than the expectation we have when we go to a place that, you know, the meals are, you know, $9.99, right? And it's not just the price difference. It's the alignment of what you expect the experience to be. And this is an important part of what we're talking about here, and especially the nature of the secret language. We are making decisions as consumers. We are making decisions every day about environments and brands and businesses that are right or wrong for us, totally based on perception, right? Perception of the way that business is presenting themselves, the style. Does it look high end or low end or somewhere in between? Is it something we've experienced before? Is it familiar to us or not? Because familiarity is very comfortable. If, you know, we're more likely to do brands unilaterally. So we're more likely buying to brands that are similar to other brands that we have bought. We make that judgment based on price. You know, if something's too low, we immediately assume it must not be good quality. If something is priced high and there's evidence that other people are buying it, we just think, wow, it must be really good. It's just not for us, right? So on in fractions of a second every day, we are making purchasing decisions based on a combination of elements. And if you put them all together, it's just this overriding perception. Where does the perception come from? The perception comes from whether that brand has communicated to you in the language that resonates for you or not.
And that's not just, that makes total sense. And I'm also hearing in the sense of this isn't just about individuals doing creative work. This applies to any company that's innovating and trying to put new ideas and new products out there.
Yeah. You know, you were talking about this before, and I think you're absolutely right, Nick, that fundamentally one of the most important things is to have a willingness to understand what things look like from the other person's point of view, because you can think you have the greatest thing in the world, but if the world doesn't perceive it that way, it's not marketable. So, you know, in my work, we start off with a lot of personal exploration. I want to know more about them. I'm looking for what makes them different. But the excitement comes, and it always does, because I believe everything is marketable. In one way, there's, like I said, if you fundamentally believe there's a market for you, if you believe there are people waiting for you to show up, then everything is marketable, right? Now, some things might be more marketable to a broader audience than others, but there is somebody out there for everybody. So when I get excited is when we have found someone's truth and authenticity and what makes them different. And when I see that what makes them different is marketable, boom, that's when I get beyond excited, because my commitment in my work is to help creative people, innovative people, people that make the world a better place. Bottom line, I mean, everybody I work with makes the world a better place. And my commitment comes from wanting them to get that out there. So when I can see the connection between who they are, what they do, and that it is marketable, and I have a pretty good assessment, I have a pretty good radar on what's marketable or not, at least to be able to find those people. That's the sweet spot. You know, that's the spot every entrepreneur is looking for. They're looking for that sweet spot between being good at what they do and connecting with the people that value what they do. A quote I use often of my own, see if I can remember it exactly, but it's something like, it's not your job to, here it is. It's not your job to find people who value, let me see if I can get this right. It's not your job to find people to value what you do, to pay what you value. I'm not going to remember right. Sorry. But the essence is that it's, you know, I think too many people get caught up in the idea that they're trying to find people to pay them what they're worth.
Yeah.
That's actually not your job. Your job is to find the people that value what you do. Right. You know, again, I'm a huge proponent of getting people to just work with the right people, because you exhaust yourself trying to prove yourself. It's not your job to prove yourself to anybody. It's your job to find the people that value what you already do. That's actually the quote.
Perfect. I mean, I'm sure we could talk at length about all of this in much more detail and go into specific tactics, but I'm sure you've got resources that people can look at to find out more about that. But we're coming up to the end of the interview, and I'd just like to ask you what I like to ask all the experts, which is, if you've got one tip or one actionable insight that people can go out and try this afternoon or this week, what would you recommend that they actually do?
Boy, I'm going to give a little less of a tip and a little bit more of a concept. I truly believe in working from the inside out, and I think that's important to understand. I know sometimes I have to work from the outside in, like just give people the tips they want to hear first. I know that can be effective. I refer to that as kind of getting them in through the back door. But fundamentally, I really believe people first need, they need to do the inside work. So something I would offer people to really think about, because I want you all to get paid what you're worth. I am, as of recently, on a mission to bust open the whole Pareto principle, which is the 80-20 rule, right? That 80% of your income comes from 20% of your customers. It's true and factual. The problem with it is for us in business today, we can't afford that. We can't afford 80% of our income. We can't afford to only have 20% of our clients be the right customers. We can't. They almost all have to be the right customers. So what I challenge people to really think of is, are you charging full value for what comes easy to you? It's one of the reasons why people struggle to get paid what they're worth is because they don't see the value in what actually is easy for them. We have this in our mindset that we should get paid more for what's hard. I put in a lot of hours. That took a lot out of me. It was exhausting. I therefore need a lot of money. It's actually the other way around. What comes easy for you is likely to be your natural skill set, your natural talent, and commands the highest price. So it is painful to me to see how many wonderfully talented and creative people not get paid what they're worth and really undercharging because, well, they say, I can knock that out in a half hour. It's easy for me. It's like, then charge five times that. Because if it comes easy to you, it does not come easy to the rest of the world. And that's the group of people that are waiting for you to show up. So charge your highest premium for what comes easy for you. And I would love to encourage people to start thinking about that differently.
It's a fascinating way of thinking. And if people want to find out more about the work that you do and the sort of insights you offer, we're going to have all the links down below the video in the description. But can you just briefly tell them what those resources are?
Sure. So I think the best resource is my community website, which is creativewarriorsunite.com. And there you'll find Creative Warriors, the podcast. You'll find a lot of free eBooks that I've written. There's also a connection there to my closed Facebook group. I encourage people to join that because we're a very active community of creative people in business. So I refer to that not as my website, but as literally for the community. We even curate articles that we come across online. There's a fantastic resource page. I put out all the tools that make creative businesses successful. I have a whole page devoted to that. So it is a resource, the entire community site. So that's very powerful. Podcasts, as you know, are incredibly valuable free information. I mean, what a world. I love that. So that would be the number one. And then secondly, I would encourage everyone to try my, I have an online mini course. It's a 7-day mini course delivered via SMS. Very quick, couple minutes a day. But it gives probably the best taste and understanding of the way I think and what I think creative people need. It's kind of an assessment. So at the end of it, you get the results of the assessment and you get that at weekofthewarrior.com. So I think it's a great place to start because you'll get a huge understanding about yourself and a little bit of an understanding of my very different way of looking at business.
Perfect. Jeffrey, it's been wonderful having you here and I look forward to speaking again with you soon.
Likewise. Thanks, Nick. I appreciate it.
Congratulations on being part of the Innovation and Creativity Summit. I'm sure that if you continue to watch the other expert interviews, you will experience an improvement in your capability to turn your ideas into something valuable. But don't forget, to get the very best experience and ensure you don't miss any of the priceless lessons, you should invest in yourself with the All Access Pass. Not only will this give you exclusive lifetime access to watch all the lessons whenever is best for you, you will also get all the interviews as downloadable audio files so you can learn on the go, full transcripts so you can read and analyze the great advice and tips, and exclusive bonuses not available to anyone else. Click the link below to get your All Access Pass now.